I like wooden docks as opposed to aluminum docks.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
So we finally connected to fish at your lake again.
Mm-hmm.
And we were not in the same boat. I had your buddy Matt Bull with me. Great guy. Boy, he started out strong. He got first fish honors. I think he had two or three in the boat before I even hooked the bass. And you had a couple before I was like the last one in on the bass parade.
Plus, but I had to go back to shore in my new Ferrari because I had forgotten my nippers and I couldn't do any surgery on my line.
Right.
So I had a delayed start and still beat you to the first fish.
Your new Ferrari. And that's well said. I tell you what, I am not a kayak guy, but I was in. Press. Tell everybody what you got.
So I picked up a Old Town Salty PDL 120. So it's a 12-foot pedal drive.
That thing moves.
It does.
I could not believe how maneuverable it was. And
fast.
And what a great setup. They thought everything through. It's the first kayak I've been truly impressed with. But the thing that would freak me out, one thing they did, which was really smart, I thought, was how that pedal drive rotates out if that prop gets, you know, weed bound.
Mm-hmm.
You can just tilt it up, clear it, drop it right back down in place.
Yep.
But it would freak me out to lift that up and see that water right there.
Why?
Level with the floor of the boat.
It's not gonna be like a cartoon where the water shoots up and then you just go down.
I know. It's just the deal where you're in a watercraft and there's a hole in it.
Yeah, there is. But I tell you what, it is so sturdy. I can stand in the rear of the boat and I can go in the very front of the boat and stand on the very, like, almost like hang 10 feet, you know, 10 toes off the end of it. And it barely moves.
Yeah. And you were standing in it a lot that day.
Yeah. So. It works out well. Standing up is a little sketchy because my mind is saying that I shouldn't be standing in a kayak, obviously. But right. The cool thing about kayaks, which there's many, is the accessorizing. So with the accessorizing that's about to take place, I'm going to have a casting bar that will assist me in standing, and I can lean against it when I cast a fly rod off of the boat.
Yeah.
So that'll be great. Plus, I also splurged and picked up a trailer as well. So I'll be trailering this boat. It's 94 pounds dry, 125 wet. I say wet when it's all loaded up with stuff. So there's that. But big thanks to Brent down there at Canoe and Kayak Rentals and Sales in Portlandville. If you're in this area, check them out. He will. You know what? Granted that I also knew him. He's an old friend of mine.
Is that where you bought it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yep. So, but his sales process.
I pass there all the time when I fish that lake.
Yeah. So their sales process, they don't pressure you. It's not like buying a car. You know, he's big on making sure that your application is correct. So when I first went in there, I just wanted to get a fishing kayak that I could stand in and I could fly fish from. Then I thought about it some more after seeing once again the pedal drive. And I was like, well, you know, then I made the decision to test drive another one. I rode it before, but I never thought about getting one because I wasn't in a position to do it. Right. So, you know, I took it out for a spin and I fell in love with the pedal drive. And also from a cardio standpoint, this will help me keep in shape. If I use it a lot, I'll be getting, you know, it's great exercise.
No water dripping off your elbows.
No.
I confess, I did buy a kayak once for about a week, used it twice, turned right around and sold it.
Was it a fishing kayak?
It was.
Sit on top?
It had three rod holders. It wasn't built the way yours is. It was a little bit, I think it was like 11 foot. It might have been 12. This was not one you can stand up in.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sit-in kayak. And every time I reached around behind me to grab another, I felt like it was flipping over. I never flipped it, but I did not. I hated the water dripping off my elbows. I hated that I couldn't carry enough stuff. I hated that I couldn't stand up. I gave it the benefit of the doubt and tried it a second time. And I drove home going, I'm getting rid of this thing. and I sold it the next day. Done. That was my experience with kayak. Yours is the first one I was ever impressed with. But we got to fish. Matt and I landed 36 fish. We had 23 bass between us, but good grief. We caught pike, pickerel. He caught 14-inch crappie. And people know I'm a multi-species. I think crappie is the king of panfish. I've talked about that. As soon as he caught that, I saw a fish break out where he threw. And I threw a Senko out there and had two pickup in two casts, but they weren't getting it. So I fired a spinner bait out there and went 3 for 3. And I went, all right, I got to get back on a bass. But note to self, I'm making a crappie trip.
We should have, if we had planned that out better, we could have actually kept those and had some. We could have eaten them afterwards.
Yeah.
That would have been a good time.
I had a fish fry. But we'll be doing that. But what I want to talk about is, because I had a request to do an episode on fishing the dog days of summer when it's, you know, August. And the stuff that we're going to have this week, they call it air you can wear. It's supposed to be the way up in the beyond the oppressive range as far as the humidity that we get here up in the Northeast. And it's supposed to be, you know, flirting with 90. But I mean, it can be yesterday morning. I was out for just 2.5 hours. I was there at 7:30 in the morning. It was only 7 to 4 degrees, but the humidity, good grief, it was air you could wear. It was miserable. And then because of that humidity, I was there maybe 10 minutes and here came the rain. It rained for about 25 minutes, 30 minutes. And at one point it just dumped like somebody was wringing out a sponge, which is what you get when that humidity builds up and then lets go. But then everything dried out over the next couple hours. And I ended up with 15 largemouth that day. Everything on a spinnerbait, and that's all I could get them to hit. But I did have a request about how to approach the dog days of summer when it's just so brutally hot, water temps are high, and what do you do when you go out and the bass just aren't biting? So when I get to a lake, when I've got those conditions, when that's what I'm faced with, and there's no getting away from it, and you just got to fish, then that's the deal with me. I just got a fish. I go very early, and early on, I do what you were doing tonight. It's usually pretty flat, calm, and I'll throw a topwater, and I'll throw around all kinds of shoreline cover. When the surface temperatures are up into the way into the 80s and sometimes up in the 90s, everybody thinks that all the fish just go deep for that cooler water. And there's a pretty good portion of them that do, but there are fish, and I'm talking about largemouth bass right now, that are shallow all the time. That's just where they are. And they'll find a feeder creek or spring or shade. They'll find the coolest water they can in those shallows. And a lot of them stay right on the bank behind deadfalls and overhanging bushes and anything like that, or ledge, anything that creates a shadow. That's going to be a little bit cooler. Underneath the canopy of lily pads or weeds matted on the surface, it'll be cooler underneath that because it doesn't get that direct sunlight. So my early approach is generally I'll start with a top water. Now, a lot of times you get there when it's the air is stagnant and the temperatures are high, the humidity levels up. It's generally pretty calm. So I'll use something subtle like a small popper, a Rebel Popper, or one of the Berkeley Chug Bug or Storm Chug Bug. Any of the subtle surface poppers like that, and I won't overwork it. And this is the old school where you throw it out, let it hit the water, wait for all the rings to disappear, and then I'll start working it. And I'll start out with a simple twitch, twitch, pause, twitch, twitch, pause cadence. And if that isn't working, and I'll do it for a while, check a lot of water, but if that's not getting any response, I'll vary the cadence and see if I need to do something specific to trigger them on that day. Now, if you do have a little chop on the water, I might step it up a notch and go with like a small whopper plopper or a Zara spook, but and walk the dog with it, but not overdo it. And then if it's one of those days where the water's hot, but you got a pretty good chop on the surface because you got a strong breeze early as the thermals are settling in and the sun's getting higher. It was cooler at night. We get that on some of the lakes up here. It's like you got boat wakes. You got a chop coming at you and there's no breeze. I believe that's caused by the thermals changing from the cool night air and with the sun warming things up. It's just a thermal inversion, I believe, is what causes it because there's no boats on the lake and there's no breeze and you got all these waves coming at you. Like, what is doing this?
The spook that you're talking about?
Zara spook.
Right. Yeah. So I fished one this past weekend. I didn't quite know what to do with it. Is it just a matter of just plugging it so it goes underwater and then comes back up again? Or no, what is it?
It's you want to use a loop knot or a snap on the front of that, on that line tie.
Mm-hmm.
That eye on the front on the nose of the bait.
Right.
And so it's got a little play and you want to snap your rod as you retrieve, just like a point your rod tip down and pop it, pop it, pop it, pop it as you're winding. And it'll keep throwing slack and pull it and keep throwing slack and pull it. If you do that, and that'll make that zigzag motion we call walking the dog. Got it's it. Not hard to do. It'll wear your arm out.
I'm sure
it will. But if you're, if you work out, if you lift weights, it won't be a problem at all. But if you haven't done it in a while, you're going to make about 10, 15 casts and go, oh, this is a lot of work. Most people don't have the patience to do that all day.
Do I look like I go to the gym?
Well, you got a cardio with your, you know, maybe.
That's right. I got the cardio. We're going to work out the arms now, too. Yeah, that'll be my full body workout. Throwing a spook and paddling.
There you go. How to get in shape in two easy lessons. There you go. That's a good plug for your old town kayak. So the thing about the Zara spook and walking the dog, that's a tremendous bait to throw when you got a good chop on the water because it kind of cuts through all that. But a buzz bait would be another good option. And these are all, you know, approaches on the surface. Now, one of my best conditions to throw a spinner bait is when you got a chop on the water. You're going to get that during the dog days. You're going to get those windy days, and those conditions just scream spinnerbait to me. And I'll tell you what, it can be a really dynamite lure, even in the dog days. Most people think, well, I'm not going to throw that because fish aren't shallow. But I always start shallow and work my way deeper at that time of year. Shallow fish are just a lot easier to target. And if they're going to be in play, you save a lot of time. And like I said, there are always fish shallow, and there's some that remain shallow all summer, regardless of the temperatures. So it's worth checking out. Chatterbait is another really good bait to throw when you got a big chop on the surface or if you got overcast conditions. I've done my best work with a chatterbait when there's a storm brewing and blowing in, when you got that wind and the skies got dark and the whole lake, it's like a different lake. And under those conditions, both spinnerbaits and chatterbaits produce a lot of fish. And yes, even in the heat of August. Now, I talked about shade, and that comes into play as the sun gets higher and higher and higher during the day. Shade lines, when you're fishing the dog days, can be a gold mine. And this plays for largemouth and smallmouth both, because I've talked about some of the lakes we fish for smallmouth. We fish these islands with these trees on them. And depending on if the islands runs east and west or north and south, you're going to get shade lines on certain sides of these islands. And if you've got like a pea gravel flat or a tapering point there, it's a dynamite combination if you've got a shade line. And those fish, it's amazing how they will be glued to that shade line. I mean, if that shade line is coming out 25, 30 feet off the bank early in the day, you've got all that water to fish. But as the sun gets higher, those shade lines kind of retreat back to the original shoreline of that island. And like I've said on other podcasts, we have fished it and thrown into those shade lines. I was once demonstrating that to a young guy who was just getting into fishing, took him out on this lake, and it was about 11:30, and we only had, good grief, there was less than 7 foot of shade coming off that bank. And now you're talking water that's only like 8-10 inches deep. And I told him, we're going to throw in that shade and we're going to catch him. And he didn't believe me, but I caught a limit throwing into that shade before we ran out of it. And he just couldn't believe that. I was glad that the fish were there and that they played and didn't make a liar out of me, because that's happened before too. But on this particular day, they were playing well, and they were only in 8 to 10 inches of water. And if you hit outside of that shade line where the sun was on the water, you did not get a strike. But if you landed in that little bit of shade, they were on it instantly. It was crazy, but it illustrated my point. Now, the sun behind islands and behind trees, and that creates good shade lines. But there's a lot of the bushes, a lot of things on the bank that can create those shade lines. Bushes overhanging the bank can do it. Docks are tremendous for that, including floating docks that are not connected to the shoreline. Now, when you're fishing docks, and again, this plays in the dog days because they create a lot of shade and there's cooler water. And yes, there are always fish that remain shallow, and docks are like a magnet for those fish that just won't leave the shallows. I like wooden docks as opposed to aluminum docks. If you've got boats tied up, most people have boats moored to their docks. Think about this. You're always in the boat going, trying not to make, if you're aware, if you have circles of awareness and you're aware of your surroundings, you're always trying to be as stealthy as possible so fish are not aware of your presence and they're only aware of your lure's presence. So an aluminum dock, is it ever fish out of an aluminum boat, have somebody drop a tackle box? It's like that.
It sounds like shattered glass
through the water. I guarantee you, every fish within 100 feet, noise, sound travels through water a lot faster than air. And I guarantee you, there's fish in that area in 150-foot radius of that aluminum boat. When somebody drops a tackle box, every fish goes, you know, they jump because they get startled.
So speaking of noise.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you always hear conflicting information. Now, when I was a kid, my dad was always big on us being quiet. For trout, it makes sense because trout are very skittish. But in general, I feel like bass don't really, I mean, obviously loud bangs is one thing. But like because like we talk out there, we're speaking at normal level. Sometimes I even have music playing when I'm out paddling around. It doesn't seem to be affecting my catch rate. You don't listen to music while you're out there.
I do not.
Do you think that would hurt the bite?
I do. I believe it will.
Hmm.
Well, think about this. When we're talking, okay, but both my bass boats are carpeted. That muffled sound and our voice coming out of our mouth, you know, 5.5-6 feet off the deck that we're standing on. But if you're playing music, you've got speakers in your boat, which are either mounted in fiberglass or aluminum or plastic.
I just had a Bluetooth speaker under my seat.
Okay.
That's where I had it. But well, I caught fish tonight. I caught fish. Phone. Through my phone. I mean, it's going to the speaker off the phone, right? Yeah. Yeah.
That's a little different than where I was going. I was going with speakers mounted in a boat.
Like a car stereo in a boat? No, it's not. That isn't what I'm thinking. I'm just thinking like, you know, okay, if your phone's going, or if I like a little bit of tunage when I'm fishing. Yeah, that's probably
probably okay with that, but I would not put my phone in direct contact with anything, direct contact with the hull, because it'll create vibration.
Got it.
And that, again, it travels through water way more efficiently. And I'm talking unnatural noise here. That's not a normal noise to them. Neither is dropping a tackle box in the bottom of a boat.
You know, the bass appeared to like Bruce Springsteen this evening.
I sent you a photo. We'll have to do a poll.
I had the boss playing when I hooked into that one I sent you earlier.
We'll call it a fishing pole.
It's very
good. We need a laugh track.
What a nice pun.
Yeah, there's nobody out there laughing. We need a laugh track. So getting back to my point about docks, aluminum docks, they'll hold fish, but I think wooden docks hold a lot more. Wooden docks, wood is a more natural material. It's softer. It's denser. If you got boats bouncing around, banging against it, and wood is a more natural sound than metal, like an aluminum dock. And it's just not as loud. Plus, the thing about the wood is you've got algae that forms on that, and that is the beginning. That's the first link in the food chain. You got little organisms that are drawn to that, little invertebrates that are drawn to them, little bait fish that are drawn to them. And then, you know, you got your bass at the upper end of that food chain. So I prefer wooden docks when I'm fishing docks. They all create shade, but the wooden docks are the best. And the longer the dock, the farther it comes out into the water, the more shade it creates. And I was pointing out to Matt, there was one dock there that had two sections, but there were four legs that went down into water and three cross braces. Those are the docks that I look for. You've got seven appendages, if you will, going down into the water column for the fish to relate to. And it was a wooden dock, and there were fish around it and underneath it. But also, I'm going to put this out there. Look at the boats that are moored against the docks. Look for the ones that have a scum line on them. And this goes for, any kind of a boat, but the pontoon boats, even though they're made of aluminum, they cast a bigger shadow than any other craft that's out there. We have caught fish throwing Texas rigs beside pontoon boats and skipping them underneath pontoon boats. We look for the pontoons that have so much crud and scum on their pontoons because we know they've been sitting there all summer and probably haven't gotten used yet. And that's just an extension of the dock that they're tied off to. And fish will get underneath those. We did one tournament where we ran a pontoon pattern very successfully. So we would always look for those on the different lakes because it's another big platform that casts a big shadow. And on a sunny day, you can go down a line of docks and look under pontoons, look under docks, especially floating docks out in the lake, and you can see a bunch of bluegill suspended underneath them. Guess what eats bluegill? Big largemouth.
Sure do.
So we would pitch a jig, like a swim jig, or throw a spinnerbait there, or drop a Texas rig underneath it. And we caught some really good largemouth underneath those floating docks and the boats that have a big scum line on them because they've just been sitting there all summer. But what if you can't find fish shallow? I pull back and I fish the deep edge of the weed beds. Grass, cabbage weed, pondweed, milfoil, all those grasses that we're used to fishing. In the dog days of summer, I typically will go out to the deep weed edge. I use my electronics, and usually around 14, 16 foot somewhere, there's a distinct wall where the weed bed stops, and that deep edge in the heat of the summer is where I start looking in the grass for largemouth during the dog days of summer. It's cooler down there. The grass helps block the sun. It also creates a lot of oxygen, which is very, very helpful in the dog days of summer. We once won a tournament on a super windy day in the heat of the summer. The winds were gusting like 20 miles an hour, and it was impossible to run an area with a trolling motor. You fought the wind too much. This was before the days of power poles. So guys would drop an anchor and they'd let out a long rope, but they were bobbing like a cork on a tether. And I happened to have a drift sock in my boat. And what we did, we located where that deep weed edge was, and we dropped a couple marker buoys. Now, this is in the old days before electronics were as advanced as they are now, but we located the deep weed edge with the electronics, dropped a couple marker buoys, and I would idle back, extend that drift sock out, tie it to a rear boat cleat. We both stood on the front deck, and all I did was use the trolling motor to keep the boat pointed the way we wanted. But we had the wind at our back, and our boat was just crawling along at about a quarter of what it would be with the wind. And with the wind at our back, we were pitching jigs ahead of us to that deep weed edge. And we won that tournament. We could have won it with four fish. We had a limit, and we won it handily. And because we used a drift sock. So that's a good trick to employ if you want to stay on an area or drift it slowly when you got heavy wind like that. Nowadays, you've got trolling motors that will use GPS to hold you in position, and you got power poles to use. We were fishing the deep weed edge that was in 14 foot, so power poles wouldn't work, but a trolling motor with anchor lock or a feature like that would be the deal. But the drift sock worked perfect. We would just drift slowly until we got into about 10 foot. We'd pull it in, idle back, and we picked up fish on every pass. So a deep weed edge is a tremendous place to catch fish during the dog days of summer. When you've got the majority of the fish in the lake that just don't want to be in those shallows when the surface temp is like 90, 92, and we get that. A large portion of them will look for cooler water, and that usually means deeper water. It can mean the shady pockets, but there's only a portion of them that stay shallow. So if you can find those, it's a lot easier, and it's a lot easier search. But when you have to go deep, I start with deep weed edges. But another place to look, and you can use your surface temperature gauge for this, if you can find springs, they will hold fish. Areas where the water's cooler. I look at creek mouths. The incoming water, moving water, usually stays cooler. So if you've got a major creek or a major tributary coming into your lake, fishing around that, there's usually a shallow area right where it comes in, where it brings in silt and stuff when you got high water conditions. But just beyond that, it should drop down to normal lake depths. And that's a tremendous place to look because it's bringing in cooler water, which is what fish are looking for. Deep pumps would be another spot, like a sunken island, or if you got water that's 25, 30 foot deep, but you've got a hump out there, a sunken island that comes up within, say, 10 or 12 foot of the surface, that water is still going to be cooler. And if you got structure on that, if you've got cover, like rocks or weed beds, you're generally going to have weed beds there. The deep edge around those would be good too. There's a couple lakes we fish that have sunken islands, and all summer long they've got weeds around their perimeter, but I go to the deepest side where that weed bed has a sharp cutoff, and I search there for fish. And I mean, you can catch walleye doing that. You can catch largemouth, smallmouth, all kinds of fish. And you'll generally be able to see them on your electronics. You know, go out and scan these areas or scope them if you've got that capability and see where the fish are. And generally, that's going to run consistent throughout the lake. If you're catching them in 12 or 14 foot, look for humps that come up to that depth. And that's generally another area where you can locate fish. Drop-offs and ledges are another good thing. And you catch largemouth there. Now I'm talking smallmouth waters and rivers, drop-offs, ledges. Those are just magnets for smallmouth. It was just a few years ago when the Mohawk River, the water temps there, we had a brutal summer, and the water temps in the river got higher than I've ever seen them before. I'm like, how are we supposed to catch smallmouth in this? So we went to the dams and the spillways and the locks, because as the water comes through, it gets highly oxygenated. That's a big draw to fish too. When the water gets that hot, you start getting issues with dissolved oxygen content. So if you've got current and you've got like plunge pools, like the water coming through the dam at the locks, that's highly oxygenated. It's bringing food, and a lot of fish will hang there. But they will also move out to the edge of the channel and hang there at different times. And again, I've talked about fishing rivers, and I always check my flats because I believe shallow fish are feeding fish, and those are the ones that I want to catch. But when the water in the river is in the upper 80s, and that's pretty tough for smallmouth to handle. Not surprisingly, my flats were not that busy, but the channel edge, the plunge pools coming through the dams, areas like that, if you got a tributary that comes in, you've got that bringing in fresh water, oxygenated water, areas like that, are really good. And in that condition situation, I'm using my standard smallmouth baits. I'm using a lot of jigs, like tube jigs or a grub or a swim jig or something of that nature. A crankbait is good, especially in the plunge pools of the lock. Swim baits, swim jigs, they're good there, and anything like that. So the whole point is to try to find the cooler water. That's where the majority of the fish will head in the dog days. So look for those deep holes, deep pumps, drop-offs. The deep edge of the weed beds, again, is a real big one for me. Lots of oxygen there, cooler water. Bait fish will head there. The game fish will head there. That's a real good deal for the largemouth in the lakes during the dog days. And for the smallmouth, I'm fishing drop-offs and ledges and stuff like that. Those are my tips for the dog days of summer and dealing with extreme water temperatures. And be patient early and late in the day when the sun's not out and not directly blasting on the water. Those are good times. It's a lot more comfortable to be on the water, but I generally will fish through the whole day and just try to figure it out. If you find where the fish are and what they want to eat, man, you can have a day. And another thing you got to watch for too is when it's like that, fish will suspend. So, and they'll just become inactive. What do you mean they'll suspend?
I mean, they'll just stay in that one level of thermocline?
They'll find a depth that's comfortable and they'll just group up and hang there, kind of inactive. They're just chilling. They're not actively feeding. They're just in between feeding periods. You could have the basin could be at 45 feet and you see all these fish on your electronics suspended at 18 foot down. Just a whole school of fish. And a lot of times when you see that, you'll see a ball of bait fish nearby and they're just kind of tracking those. So, I mean, your electronics can be your best friend in the dog days because they will show you where fish are if you learn how to interpret them. And these days, the electronics are so good. There's not a whole lot of interpretation like there used to be back in the early days. I'm talking 40 years ago when I first got into electronics, but they have come a long way and they're still advancing at warp speed nowadays. But suspended fish are often the hardest fish to catch because they're inactive. But with the advent of the spy bait technique, you can get a bait to hang right in front of their face. And a lot of times those inactive fish will bite something like that. Another technique that's gotten really popular, Jeff Gustafson won the Bassmasters Classic a couple years ago doing what's called the moping technique. That's what they call it. It's what I've been doing for perch and other species for decades. I didn't know there was a name for it. They're using a little 2-inch swim bait on a small jig head and putting it right down where the fish are and moving it real slow. He calls it moping because he's moping around with a swim bait. It's not a real active technique. You're working it real slow, deliberate, and subtle like you would with a spy bait. But those two techniques are dynamite for catching those suspended fish that are at a specific depth. You just have to know your equipment, know how to work the bait, and if you've got the new electronics where you can use LiveScope or Active Target or any of these modes that are out there, you can actually watch your bait go down to the fish and see how the fish respond to it. And that's a tremendous benefit when fish are suspended. It's a tremendous benefit anytime. But with the new electronics, it's become a whole lot easier. You can see what's going on in real time, and it makes all the difference in the world. We're not fishing blind anymore. The electronics nowadays are just so incredible. I do have LiveScope on one of my bass boats. I have I've got the Garmin Panoptics LiveScope with the latest transducer. Got a big graph on the front deck, and it's amazing what you can see. And I'm just scratching the surface. I'm an old guy with new electronics. I didn't grow up with electronics in school. I didn't grow up with video games. So the learning curve for me is a lot steeper, but I know a lot of young fishermen, and I have learned a lot from them. The learning goes both ways. So Nick Petru, if you're out there listening, Tristan Bauer, if you're out there listening, you guys made a difference in my fishing, and I thank you for that. So that's what I've got.
Someone is going to have a kayak with electronics on it.
Don't hold your breath. I was impressed with your kayak for you.
Oh.
I have five boats because I need room no matter what I'm using.
You need six boats, including a kayak.
You explain that to my wife.
Get her one too.
Yeah, she's not interested.
She's not a boater.
Nope, she goes out when we take my grandson out. He likes the bass boat. He's asking for another trip in that.
So it's a race car. Of course he does.
Got to make that happen. He likes going fast. He spends more time turned around watching that rooster tail. He would not watch where we're going. He wants to see that rooster tail. Biggest mistake I ever made. First time I ever took him out in a bass boat. We were where I put in. There's a long no wake zone before you get to an area where you can run. So we're just idling through, making small talk. I come to the last camp, and then it's the no wake zone is over for quite a ways till you get to a campground area where it narrows down. And I turn to him, and he calls me Papa, and I said, "Honor, tell Papa put the hammer down." And he looks at me like, "What?" I said, "Just say put the hammer down." So he looks at me. He says, "Put the hammer down." I drop the throttle. We all get sucked back in the seat as you come out of the hole. He got this grin on his face. He heard that motor, you know, roar, and he turned around and he was watching that rooster tail grinning ear to ear. And I'm running until we get to this. We're coming up on this campground, and I come off pad back to an idle. There's all these people out in this campground on their docks at their campers watching us idle through with a kid yelling, "Put the hammer down, put the hammer down." And I'm going, "I can't do that here. I can't do that here." And he's yelling, "Put the hammer down." Yep. I created a monster.
Love it.
That's my own doing.
All right.
He is a blast.
Well, for all you out there, be sure to follow Mr. Bilby on the Insta at all lowercase Roy Bilby. And if you have a question or a comment for him, slide into his DMs. Or if you're old school, send us an email at anglerwithinpodcast@gmail.com.
We appreciate it very much. We appreciate everybody that's listening. I get comments on my DM every single week about the episodes that we put out. It's incredibly gratifying and incredibly humbling that you're appreciating the content, what we're putting out there. I'm just drawing from 40 years of writing everything down in explicit detail so I could become a better fisherman. And now I'm driven and passionate about sharing what I've learned with you to help you tap into your angler within.